We have some more disturbing Lori Vallow news. Brian Koberger, pretty smooth with the police. What is going on in Texas? And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. And just remember, ladies and gentlemen, food doesn't assault people. People assault people. Let's talk about it. Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for joining us. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't. Like if you do. Leave me a comment and hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. You'll definitely want to have that little bell set, well, because we're doing the Letitia Stalk jury verdict watch. You're going to want to see it live when it happens. We'll bring it to you. All right, let's support the people that support Crime Talk. Okay, we've mentioned this before. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Please sign up for this background subscription service. When you do, you can search as many people and do a background search on them as you desire. And you can cancel it at any time. So whether you got to keep one person or do 10 people, or maybe you're just interested in names that come up in these crazy cases that we talk about, you can do that. Maybe there's someone coming into your life, a new boyfriend, a new girlfriend. Maybe somebody's dating the kids. What do you know about the family? You can use it to check people out. Make sure if you don't get that warm, fuzzy feeling, your instincts are probably correct. Confirm them. Remember, information is power. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy that you did. All right, let's go ahead and open the record for May 8th, 2023. And begin with the docket. First on the docket, the Lori Vallow trial. More disturbing information. Now, we knew it all along. We've talked about this for the last several years. Let's face it, Lori Vallow rocked Chad's world. So much so that, well, he allegedly killed his wife to be with Lori Vallow, and that she allegedly killed her kids to be with Chad. Just a little marriage made in heaven, wouldn't you say? Yeah, no, not so much. Well, last week, there was a detailed look at some text messages between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell just days after her husband, Charles Vallow, well, just happened to be killed by her brother. These coincidences, ladies and gentlemen, well, they're disturbing. As the two were sending romantic text messages to each other, Mr. Vallow's son, Zach and Cole, were pleading with their stepmother, Lori Vallow, to be told the basic details about how their father had died after she pretty much nonchalantly informed them that, oh, your dad has passed in a text. Meanwhile, Mr. Chad Daybell sent messages professing his feelings for her and even an elaborate romance story, sections of which were read out in court last week. And Chad Daybell, who obviously married Lori Vallow on November 5th, just weeks after his wife's Tammy's sudden death. Wow, it's almost like the stars were aligning and they were meant to be. I guess that's what Lori and Chad looked at it. Unfortunately, the prosecution for them, well, they say that's a plot and a conspiracy to commit murder for which Lori Vallow is charged with. So the former FBI Special Agent Douglas Hart continued his testimony, and he was the one that led kind of the response when Tylee and JJ were declared missing. He was pretty much hands-on throughout the entire investigation, and his biggest role was to examine Lori's two iCloud accounts, which was important because of the value of information that is contained in the iCloud storage, according to the special agent. What have I told you, ladies and gentlemen? If you're going to, you know, go cheat on your spouse, you're going to go commit crime, which nobody is asking anybody to do, not encouraging that in any way, or the spousal stuff, but let's get for real. It is all recorded. The cell phone is the greatest police investigative tool ever created. Just saying. That's where they get all these text messages from. That is going to get the defendant more than likely convicted. At least that's my prediction. And as I've said before, and I will say it again, after 28 years of doing this job, I can tell you, it's always the defendant's own words that get them in the end. Well, so the special agent in this sense said he had a large volume of communications between Lori and others in this case, and he said that they have a lot of emails, notes, and recordings that they discovered during the review and the analysis of these iCloud accounts. Focusing on the period after Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell met on 26 October back in 2018 at a conference in St. George, Utah. The agent examined 4,500 text messages, voicemails, and photos sent between the two. Agent Hart testified that he discovered several leads in the text messages, such as Lori and Chad saying they wanted to get married and lead a life together, and the beginning of their affair that led to the murders, allegedly, of course. There were several communications regarding JJ and Ty Lee that were relevant to their death, and after the affair began, there began to be in communications regarding the deaths of Charles Vallow, Tammy DeBell, JJ Vallow, and Ty Lee Ryan. Now, Agent Hart also said that Chad and Lori used the word obstacles to describe the children as well as their spouses. There were also discussions about life insurance policies and Social Security payments that JJ and Ty Lee were meant to receive. Now, texts between Lori and her brother Alex Cox and her niece Melanie were also deemed relevant and admitted by the court. 2 days before Charles Vallow was murdered, Lori Vallow told her niece, "They have an elaborate plan. I'll call you soon. We both need to stay here to defend ourselves. It's coming to a head. This week will change everything." Change it did it not? She then arranged for her brother to be present at her home at a time when Charles would come over. And then on July 11th, 2019, Alex Cox shot and killed Charles Vallow. The court then allowed the prosecution to show the text messages Lori Vallow sent to Charles' son, like I said, who nonchalantly informed them of his father's death. It reads, "Hi, boys. I have some very sad news. Your dad passed away yesterday. I'm working on making arrangements, and I'll keep you informed with what's going on. I'm still not sure how to handle things. Just want you to know that I love you, and so did your dad." The sincerity is overwhelming. Well, the two brothers then send a stream of text messages, despite messages which Ms. Vallow ignores for lengthy periods and sporadically answers, giving little further information. As the text chain was unfolding, the court was shown how over the same period, Ms. Vallow was exchanging flirtatious messages with Mr. DeBell. Some of those read, "I love you so much immensely that the whole universe knows it. And very soon, the people on this little blue globe will know it too." He told her in one text 3 days after the death of her husband. That's right. It's almost like they knew each other beforehand. Imagine that. Later that day, Mr. DeBell continued to text her an extensive piece of romantic fiction that was eventually compiled as part of the evidence against the two in this case. Those in the courtroom reported that the jury seemed to find the testimony very interesting. Now, today, there was some issues regarding some exhibits that were going to be admitted. Nicholas Edwards, one of the lead investigators at the Attorney General's office, was going to testify. And Mr. Archibald opposed the exhibits coming in. And his objection is that, hey, the prosecution is picking and choosing from police reports and then submits arguments that have not been admitted as evidence in this trial. And he said that they're basically picking and choosing what's important here by asking witnesses to choose the most relevant part of their testimony and submit it in this exhibit form, basically these PowerPoint presentations. And then he said it's improper. I have to agree with Mr. Archibald on this. I noticed this throughout the trial that each witness has this PowerPoint to kind of aid them. I mean, this is not a PowerPoint presentation. This is a trial. The witnesses need to testify from their memory. If there are documents that need to come in, then they need to lay the proper foundation for those documents. Well, guess what? Even the judge agreed. And he's concerned about these summaries that the prosecution is putting together. And as Mr. Archibald said, they're put on during closing arguments, not in to call a witness to make their closing argument for them. Now, Boyce said that he shares the concern of the defense. He took it under advisement, probably won't have a ruling on it. But he says witnesses are summarizing their testimony and reading off the slides, the judge said. I don't see how that's any different than reading out of a report, which is not allowed under the rules of evidence. Like I said, Boyce says the exhibits also appear to be the first bite of the apple in closing arguments, which witnesses should not be making, but is obviously safe for the prosecution. So, and this is what happens when the judge gives the prosecution everything they want. Even at a certain point, it becomes offensive. But then the judge is put in the spot. Well, judge, you've been letting this do it all along. And Mr. Archibald hasn't been objecting to it all along. Kind of a problem as well. It's what happens when you just don't follow the rules. This morning, the agent was back on the stand going through some more text messages. A lot of talk about sex. Some religious talk about how basically these two believe that they were this god and goddess, the chosen ones to lead the people in these doomsday theories. And then they had a lot of talk about death percentages, talk about how the kids were possessed. Yeah, those obstacles, those pesky little obstacles. What were they to do with them? Now, here's the issue. Is the jury going to be ultimately convinced that there was a conspiracy? There's no necessarily an agreement. There's no wink and a nod. Maybe Alex Cox knew about this as well and acted on his own. I'm assuming that's what the argument is going to be by the defense. We'll see if the jury is buying it or they believe there is a conspiracy with all these wink and a nod, hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more, right? That's what we're talking about. Next, Letitia Stauch. The jury deliberates. An El Paso County jury has resumed deliberating this morning to determine the fate of Letitia Stauch, who was obviously charged in the 2020 killing of her 11-year-old stepson, Gannon Stauch. Now, the jury began deliberations Friday afternoon noon to determine whether Stauch is guilty of first-degree murder and a sundry of other charges as it relates to Gannon's death. But Letitia Stauch has pled not guilty by reason of insanity, which is saying, I did it, but I was crazy. The jury ended their deliberations Friday about 5 p.m., and they resumed again 9 a.m. this morning. After the court answered two jury questions asking for a list of the exhibits and a report from Dr. Dorothy Lewis. She was the psychiatrist who evaluated Letitia Stauch and was a witness for the defense. The court provided a list of admitted exhibits to the jury, but said that the reports from expert witnesses are not admissible into evidence and would not be provided. You have to judge her testimony on the stand. But apparently somebody wanted to hear what the good doctor had to say. Now, attorneys from both sides in the trial for Letitia Stauch agreed in their closing statements Friday that she told many lies in the weeks and months after Gannon was murdered, but they disagreed about what those lies meant. Obviously, the prosecutor argued that there's evidence that she knew exactly what she was doing, and the defense argued that they proved that she was insane. Now, remember, Gannon was reported missing on January 27th of 2020 by his stepmother. It's on that day, according to prosecutors, that Stauch viciously and deliberately attacked the boy in his bedroom by stabbing him multiple times, hitting him in the head with an object, and then firing a gun at him at least three times. One of the bullets struck Gannon in the head. The knife and the object were never recovered. Now, in closing arguments, both sides focused on Stauch's actions and what they meant about her mental state. Prosecutors alleged that Stauch told lies with the hope of getting away with the killing of her stepson, and that's evidence of premeditation, hence murder in the first degree. There are people who are truly legally insane, said the prosecutor Dave Young. They don't act like that. If they don't have the capacity to know right from wrong, they're not going to hide a body. They're not going to act like nothing happened. They also don't lie because there's no reason to lie because they don't think it's wrong. Good argument, Mr. Young. Now, Stauch's defense attorneys contend that she suffered a psychotic break at the time that Gannon was killed, which is what their expert testified to, and it makes no sense for someone who has pre-planned, for whatever reason, whatever motive, to brutally kill Gannon, to then report him missing right away, and then in a matter of 3 days, go to the police with a completely illogical, incoherent story. It's not the actions of a sane person, her attorneys argued. Next, Brian Koberger, pretty slick with those police officers. Yep, video's been released where Brian Koberger talked his way out of a traffic ticket for running a red light in Pullman, Washington. That was about a month before the November killings. And this newly released body cam footage shows his interaction with the police officer. Now, this video is about 9.5 minutes, and it shows the Washington State University campus police officer pull over and park behind Mr. Koberger in a campus parking lot on August 14th of 2022. Koberger was seated behind the wheel of his white 2015 Hyundai Elantra that had those now famous Pennsylvania license plates. Now, the police officer approached the driver's side window and explained the infraction before asking Mr. Koberger's license, vehicle registration, and proof of insurance. She says, "I think you know why I stopped you. You ran the red light," the officer told Mr. Koberger, who explained that, "Wow, I was stuck in the middle of the intersection. I was behind you the whole time," she responded. Mr. Koberger, then a graduate student living in Pullman, sought the specifics of the law, detailing how he's from rural Pennsylvania, not familiar with these big city ways in Washington. He wasn't aware of the potential violation. "We actually don't have, like, crosswalks," Mr. Koberger said. "There's a little bit more leeway as well. Like, there's one white line and there's another one in front. Like, there's a certain margin from which you can actually kind of put your vehicle and place your vehicle," he argued. "I'm just curious about the law. I don't mean to disagree with anything," he added. Well, along with the video of the other traffic stop of Koberger in August in Moscow, homicide investigators cited the WSU traffic stop footage in a probable cause affidavit for Koberger's December arrest in eastern Pennsylvania. They noted that the officer's body cam video depicted him as the driver and the sole occupant of the white sedan with the Pennsylvania license plate. This video comes to light as a result of a request for records of showing Koberger's August 21-22 traffic stop in Idaho for driving without a seatbelt, and that was previously denied by the Latah County Sheriff's Office, citing its potential to impede a person's right to a fair trial. No written report on that stop exists, according to the police department. Next on the docket, what is going on in Texas? Well, if you haven't seen it, video footage shows the moment an SUV plowed into a crowded bus stop in a Texas border town, killing 8 people and leaving at least another 11 injured. Now, this all took place early Sunday morning, and there's a clip that was released by a local congressman hours after the crash, with the driver now in custody after an 8th victim was confirmed deceased on Sunday evening. Now, the snippet starts seconds before the moments of impact, where a group of at least 17 can be seen sitting on the curb or standing waiting at the stop of the Ozanaman Center, which houses homeless migrants. Now, the unnamed motorist in a Range Rover comes into frame, hurtling towards the group at a quite fast speed. And the footage, we're only going to show you portions of it, given its graphic nature, then shows the crowd being obliterated by the vehicle, which, according to police, say ran a red light. Now, as of Monday morning, it's not known if the strike was intentional. However, witnesses who survived the accident claim the driver, identified as an uncooperative Hispanic male by police, hurled profanities at the group as he raced towards them. And then, of course, we had the other little incident. That's right, another shooter who killed at least 8 people at the mall in Allen, Texas on Saturday as well. Now, apparently the individual frequently posted pro-white supremacist or neo-Nazi materials on social media, according to the FBI. The document produced by the FBI also says that the alleged shooter was discharged from the military in 2008 amid mental health concerns. Well, the shooter, Mauricio Garcia, not normally a name you would figure associated with white supremacists, entered the regular army in June of 2008. He was discharged 3 months later without completing the initial entry training, which basically usually means he's not compatible to the military lifestyle, and they sent him home at boot camp. In other words, he was a quitter, or he had some mental health issues, and the army said, "We don't want you to have guns." What you're starting to notice the theme here, ladies and gentlemen? Starting to notice the theme? Mental health. Yes. Maybe we could have a list. If you've ever gone to a psychiatrist, seen a psychologist, maybe you need to turn over your medical records and let you know that you don't no longer have the right to possess a firearm. Possibly. But that'd be outrageous. That'd be invasion of privacy. You have a right to privacy under the Constitution, right? Tricky little subject. Tricky subject indeed. Now, investigators believe that the shooter, like I said, was a neo-Nazi. According to this email that was circulated by the Texas law enforcement branch. On Saturday, a man identified law enforcement documents as 33-year-old Dallas resident Mauricio Garcia, and he opened fire at Allen Premium Outlets. The suspected shooter was killed by police at the scene where several of the victims were found deceased. Nine additional victims were later transported to the hospital. Another two victims later died at the hospital. Garcia apparently had no criminal history, but is believed to have been associated with a local neo-Nazi group, according to that email. Just can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen.
As a pet owner, you want to give your furry friend the very best. That's why Baked in Colorado's CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect choice. These delicious treats not only taste great, but they also provide a wide range of health benefits for your pet. CBD has been shown to have many positive effects on dogs, including reducing anxiety, alleviating pain and inflammation, and improving overall wellness. Baked in Colorado's treats are infused with premium, full-spectrum CBD oil, meaning your pet will benefit from the whole plant extract. Not only that, but Baked in Colorado's treats are made with all-natural human-grade ingredients, so you can feel good about what you're giving your pet. They're also free from wheat, corn, and soy, making them a great option for dogs with food sensitivities. Baked in Colorado CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect way to support your pet's health and well-being. With various flavors, including peanut butter, pumpkin, and bacon, your dog will love them too. So why wait? Head to www.bakedincolorado.com today and order your dog a bag of these delicious and nutritious treats. Your pet will thank you for it.
And next, finally, our dumb criminal of the day. That's right, more food-related crimes plaguing the country. Stop the madness. Stop it. A Louisiana man is behind bars after allegedly clobbering his brother in the head with a frozen bag of chicken. Tommy Bowell battered his brother late Tuesday evening inside a mobile home they shared in West Monroe, Louisiana. The victim said that when he asked Bowell about two windows busted out of his residence, his brother became angry and began throwing things at him. The victim said that Bowell grabbed a bag of frozen chicken out of the freezer and struck him in the side of the head with the poultry. Bowell then allegedly continued grabbing frozen fruits, which he threw at his brother. Now, the victim, who wasn't identified other than as being Mr. Bowell's brother, refused medical attention, and he did request that criminal charges be pursued against Mr. Bowell, who was busted on a misdemeanor battery count. I think it should have been a felony. It's a deadly weapon. A frozen chicken part or a whole chicken could cause serious bodily injury. Doesn't matter if he did. Could be a deadly weapon. Just saying. I think it's about time we have laws identifying food as deadly weapons. It could leave broken bones, scarring, permanent disfigurement, burns. The definition of serious bodily injury. Yes, it could. Stop the madness, ladies and gentlemen. Stop the madness. And if it would save just one life, wouldn't it be worth it? Anyway, Mr. Bowell is locked up because he can't pay the $500 bond. Can't make it up, ladies and gentlemen. All right, thanks for watching. Make sure you've hit that little bell so you receive notifications. Have a wonderful day, and I'll see you next time on Crime Talk.